Call this meeting of the House
Finance Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:34 on Wednesday, the 4th, 2026. Present today are Representative Allard, Representative Hannon, Representative Bynum, Representative Stapp, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Galvin, and two co-chairs, co-chair Foster and myself, co-chair Josephson. Also present today are House Finance Committee staff, Committee Assistant Helen Phillips, Paige Tallulah-Lastufka, Secretary Bree Wiley, and Secretary Leah Frazier. We also have our moderator, Emily Mesh, from the Legislative Information Office with us. Before we start, please mute your cell phones. In today's meeting, the Office of Management and Budget will present an overview of the FY26 Governor's Supplementals. Then the Department of Education and Early Development will present its FY27 Department Budget Overview. With us today from the Office of Management and Budget is Director Lacey Sanders. Director, please come forward, put yourself on the record, and begin your presentation.
Get a brief of these, sir. Just a brief. Brief of these.
Brief of these. We're back on record and have been joined by Co-Chair Shragi. Ms. Sanders, good afternoon. Tell us about the governor's amendments to his FY26 budget.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. For the record, my name is Lacey Sanders. I am the Office of Management and Budget Director for the governor. And today I am going to walk through an overview of the fiscal year 2026 supplementals. As required by statute, these are due to the legislature on the 15th day. The documents were transmitted to the legislature on Monday to be introduced for the legislature's viewing yesterday. So with that, I will start just a high-level overview. I'm going to talk through some items. In the committee members' packets is a very large spreadsheet with a list of every item. I wasn't planning on talking about every item today, but happy to take questions from the committee as we go through if there are items that I don't touch on. So with that, Chair, I will move forward to slide number 2 and just begin the presentation with an update to our fiscal year 2026 supplemental. This is our fiscal summary, and it includes both what the legislature and was passed last year and was enacted into law, which is our 26 management plan, as well as the proposed supplementals. This includes the supplementals that were released on December 11th in the governor's budget that we've talked about before, as well as those that were introduced on February 3rd. Just because this is so detailed and I'm going to walk through higher level summaries in just a moment, I'll just drop down to the bottom line where that we reflect the updated deficit with the oil price as what was projected by the Department of Revenue and the total supplementals that have been requested. The overall deficit is now $425.9 million. As proposed in the governor's budget, this would be drawn from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. So moving on to slide number 3, I'll start with the operating supplemental request. As you can see at the top of the slide, we've included a line for the December 11th supplementals that were introduced. This is a combination of two items. One, for the fire fund. There was two letters that were transmitted to the legislature during the interim for fire disaster declarations. Those totaled $55 million. We are still working with the Department of Natural Resources on updating and finalizing the supplemental number for fiscal year 2026, so that has not been included at this point. We will continue to work with the Department of Natural Resources to get the legislature an updated number once we've finalized that process. Also included in that December 11th date was the $40 million that we discussed in our last meeting for a deposit into the Disaster Relief Fund. So moving down, we move to the February 3rd supplemental requests for the bill that was transmitted to the legislature. As you can see, there's requests throughout all of the agencies. Again, I will highlight some of the larger items on the next slide. The total request for supplementals in the February 3rd release totaled $79.1 million in unrestricted general funds, with a grand total of $881 million for all funding sources. Most notably, you know, that large increase is due to the Federal Receipt Authority that we'll talk about for both the Rural Health Transformation Fund and for the Medicaid updated projection that was submitted. So just summarizing at the bottom of the page, right now the total supplementals for the operating budget are $174 million of unrestricted general funds and $992 million in total funds, and you can see the other breakdowns across there.
Director, yep. At the top of slide 3, you note supplemental requests are totaling $95 million in UGF, but they're substantially more than that, aren't they? You've just highlighted disaster and fire in that column, or that row is the better word?
Chair Josephson, so in the December 11th budget, those are the two primary items that were unrestricted general funds in the December budget that was released that were supplemental. Mm-hmm. On February 3rd, we introduced another bill, and those are all of the items here. There were a few other supplemental items. I didn't cover every single item. We talked about those last week or the week before when I was before the committee. So there's two bills that have supplementals in them, the governor's bill mm-hmm. and then the supplemental bill that we just submitted.
Okay. I'm tracking.
Perfect.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. On that same point, so the DOT match money that maybe you've heard about is not being considered a supplemental?
It is. It is on a future slide under capital.
Okay.
Yep. Through the chair. Sorry.
And Higher Education Investment Fund is clearly not capital. But you're not showing it here. Why, again?
Chair Josephson, the capitalization of the Higher Education Fund is shown as a transfer between the CBR and the Alaska Higher Education Investment Fund. It is a supplemental. It nets to zero with a positive and a negative, but it is accounted for in our totals.
Okay.
All right. So if it's okay with the committee, I'll move forward to the operating supplemental highlights.
Yep. We have a question from Representative Stack.
Yeah, thank Co-Chair Justin to the Chair, Director Sanders. Thanks for being here. Is the same true of the existing deficit in FY26? We're not reflecting that in that slide as an example.
Through the Chair, Chair Stapp, are you referring to this surplus deficit here?
Yeah, through the chair, correct. But it's
through the chair. It is
okay.
Accounted for.
There. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, moving Chair Josephson, if it's okay, I'll continue back to slide 4.
Yes, please.
Thank you. So starting with the Office of Administration, there is a $3.3 million unrestricted general fund request for the Office of Public Advocacy. Historically, this office has utilized a multi-year appropriation to address their criminal case backlog. This request would provide $3.3 million for them to continue to work on that backlog for fiscal years 2026 and 2027. So it's called what we refer to as a multi-year appropriation. Under the Department of Corrections, we continue to work with the Department of Corrections to bring their budget in line with what they are experiencing in costs. As you recall, last year there were two reductions. One was for a closure of one of the wings at the Spring Creek Correctional Center. This was a $7.5 million reduction to the department, as well as a $6 million $6.8 million reduction for related to costs that were paid in prior years for letters of agreement that were no longer in place. The department is still experiencing costs associated with other things within the institutions, meaning salaries for overtime, ensuring that their operational needs are met. And so we have requested from the committee a $20 million supplemental to meet the fiscal year 2026 costs. In addition, there is a $1.1 million request for the Community Residential Center beds contract. This is a contractual increase that we experience. There is a corresponding increment in the FY 2027 budget. And then lastly, there is a $2.9 million increase, just under $3 million increase for inmate health care. This is operational needs due to the aging population that the department is experiencing and ensuring that we have medical staff on site to address the the population's needs. Under the Department of Health, we have several items that I'm going to talk about today. The first one is a $272 million increase for the Federal Rural Health Transformation Fund that the Department of Health received an award for recently. As you all may recall, the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee met and approved an RPL, Revised Program Legislative, for $200 million. That $200 million only applies to fiscal year 2026. So in order to provide the Department of Health the authority for the years that the award covers, we're asking for a three-year, multi-year appropriation for fiscal years 26, 27, and 28. We expect that we'll have a second request before the committee for an additional $272 million for 27, 28, and 29 to cover the next year of the award. It's a five-year award, and we would continue that phased approach moving on into the future.
Director, my understanding is that I wouldn't object to it being multi-year, but it better be spent by, I think, the beginning of the federal year. In other words, you can't leave any behind. But here you're saying you might do that. That's how I read the multi-year.
Chair Josephson, the easiest way for me to explain this is that we are trying to operate within a state fiscal year appropriation need and a federal fiscal year award. And so in order to have the funding available and spent in the time that the federal government has allowed it to be spent, we need authority to cover this time frame in order to ensure that it is expended in the appropriate time.
Okay. I'm just letting you know that isn't what I've heard. I trust the folks at Department of Health. I trust you, certainly. I'm just telling you that what I've heard in five or six meetings is we must spend it all year to year. There's no carryovers allowed.
Chair Josephson, that is my understanding. There is a designated time frame. I don't have those in front of me right at the moment. We did build out kind of a graphic that I can provide the committee that shows the time frame that the federal award is allowed and how it covers a state fiscal year. That might be a helpful visualization for the committee, and we'll make sure you get a copy.
Okay. Please continue.
Right. Under the second bullet, this is a total of $21 million for public assistance's eligibility systems, rising operational costs. So the Division of Public Assistance has utilized in the past years several multi-year appropriations to cover costs associated with catching up on the backlog, ensuring positions are filled. That those multi-years are no longer available to us. We have a shortfall. Our costs associated with the operational systems continues to increase. And so this would provide $11.2 million of state match and access to $11.8 million of federal receipt authority.
Okay. Representative Bynum has a question for the director, then Representative Stapp.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. Specifically, I hate to back up, but you were mentioning, you're talking about the Rural Healthcare Transformation funding. There is the federal fiscal year, and then we obviously have Alaska's fiscal year. The information you're talking about providing is specifically based on the federal fiscal year, and that we have to then work within those parameters. correct me if I'm wrong, I believe that the first allocation of this funding is for federal fiscal year 26. Is that accurate?
Through Rector. The chair, Representative Bynum, the award was made on December 31, which is part of state fiscal year 2026.
Yes.
And I think what, if it's okay with the committee, I'd like to make sure I get you that diagram of how we laid out the state fiscal years to apply within the federal years that the funding is available. Because I think it'll help demonstrate for you that we are trying to ensure that we have the authority to spend the money in the state fiscal years that cover the federal fiscal years that we're talking about.
I'll be patiently waiting. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Oh, Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin. Through the chair to Director, hopefully you can answer this question, but you might have to defer to the health folks. The eligibility assistance system's rising operational costs. So we have dumped two massive capital appropriations into upgrading the software once a couple of years ago for about $57 million and 5 years before that for about $30 million. And the objective was to kind of get out from under this. So my question is this driven by ARIES? Is this driven by EIS? And kind of where are we at on our modular system that's supposed to avoid this type of thing through the chair?
Director.
Through the chair, or to the chair, Representative Josephson, if I could bring Director Pam Halloran up, she has a better explanation than I'm going to be able to articulate.
Through the chair. Yes.
Please.
For the record, Pam Halloran, Assistant Commissioner, Department of Health, through the chair, Representative Stapp. A lot in that question. So what we're very grateful to have received numerous capital appropriations for systems modernization for the Division of Public Assistance. This appropriation is an operating appropriation. Those were capital. So what we're at a place where those operating or there's capital appropriations are shifting over to M&O, maintenance and operation. So licensing and maintenance, and so they're shifting over to operating. This is, and then you asked about which systems. This is covering a number of systems, and I have that information here. It's covering ARIES, which is the Alaska Resource for Integrated Eligibility Systems. It's covering iLinks, which is our document management workflow system. It's covering IVES, IEVS, which is our income and eligibility verification system. And it's covering CURRENT, which is our workflow system. It stands for Comprehensive Resource Eligibility and Verification Tracking System. So, yes, there is a plan to have a fully integrated system. We're almost there. Bear with me while I... We have, it's a system that's called the Alaska Connect Portal, and that's online. Now we're working on integrating all of the systems so that our staff cannot have to toggle between systems and be at one place. There's a good path. They've done good work.
Follow up, Representative Staff.
Yeah, thank you, Coach Justin, to the chair, to Deputy Assistant Director. Thanks for being here. So again, I know the fundamental difference between the capital appropriations and the operating. The purpose of the capital appropriations was to avoid these type of increases in the operating appropriation, right? So you mentioned the different types of system. The objective was if we spend $50 million plus, we can create a singular battle system that avoids this type of thing. And I know that we're getting there, so my hope would be that in the future, do you see repeated requests for supplemental appropriations for these eligibility systems after we finish the software upgrade? Through the chair.
Assistant Commissioner.
Through the chair, Representative Stapp, what I can tell you is one of our largest system costs is the mainframe. And we are anticipating getting off the mainframe and reducing that cost near the end of FY28. I realize that's just one of many costs. We might need to defer to the Division of Public Assistance for they have an entire plan that's all mapped out. And so perhaps we can get back to you with that full plan.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. I, too, would love to ask you questions, if I may, regarding where we are, particularly with the public assistance pieces. I was with the representative we just heard from when these discussions took place, and I remember very distinctly asking, what will it take? We had been presented nicely with we need $57 million for this. We did let go a couple of years ago of 100 workers, and we need to hire back now. I think it was 40. They asked for different wages for the 40. There were many discussions about this because the bottom line, like you, we wanted to help make sure that we are a good pass-through for the federal funds that are coming our way. Mostly it's around feeding Alaskans, but there's other things that you do, and I'm grateful. And so I guess what I wanted to say is it might be worth having a presentation at some point, Co-Chair, if you would allow us to understand where the $57 million went, what happened with hiring and training the people who we thought were going to be hired and trained. And I think the goals were fewer hours of wait time for Alaskans who were trying to reestablish the benefits that some of them were accidentally kicked off of. There's all these different things. And the bottom line is all of us are representing people who were either trying to get to these services or they want to be part of a state that is not getting fined $11 million or $18 million or whatever it is because we're still trying to catch up with our systems. And so I'm back to the question of what will it take and could we possibly have a bit of, at some point, this isn't the time because we're going over some really big pieces right now, but it's such an important part of our work as a state, healthcare, and making sure that we're looking after delivering these services, that I ask for us to have a set aside of a few minutes at some point because it can feel a little bit like insanity when you're kind of going through the same questions and somehow we're – it's like Groundhog's Day, and we're not there on Groundhog's Day. That was yesterday or the day before. So I would like us, if we could, please, at some point to go through this piece. And I also wanted to ask if there's a way for this could be paid for through the Rural Health Transformation Funds, because it sounds like some of these pieces are brand new to the state. I don't know if they're considered innovative or considered within the parameters, but if so, I wouldn't want to miss that opportunity either. Thank you.
I think the best opportunities are probably not today, although your points are well made, but when the Department of Health does its budget overview before us, before we take up the budget in Committee Substitute 1, it's typically called.
But
the Rural Health Transformation Fund piece, we can ask D.C. Ritchie whether there'd be fund availability. My hunch is no, but I don't know. Okay. Director.
Thank you. So, again, just for the record, since I have two female voices, this is Lacey Sanders again. So under the third bullet under the Department of Health, we have a $5.9 million increase. Of that, $4.3 million is federal receipt authority and $1.5 million is state match for the Public Assistance Virtual Contact Center contract. This is a contract that the Division of Public Assistance has to help work through the eligibility process. This was not funded last year, and we are bringing it back again for the committee to consider this year.
Okay, so I want the committee to take note of that piece in particular. The legislature writ large did not fund this request. I think the department is managing to sort of start it up anyway, which I applaud. But they've asked for this again. And sometimes, as we've seen in previous budgets, they don't do that. So I just ask you to take notice of this piece. Please continue.
Thank you. And the final bullet on the slide has to do with the Medicaid projections. So each December 15th, the Department of Health provides a Medicaid projection based on numbers through the beginning of December. This represents that number at the beginning of December. The Department of Health will complete another update for the legislature here shortly in the mid-February. And so, again, we'll have an updated number, but this at least fills that placeholder for Medicaid as what we have now for a number.
Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Because you asked us to pay attention to that element, I guess I want to go back to this virtual contact center, which shows a substantial federal grant, I presume, or federal match to it, but it's in a supplemental. And if we, so I guess I'm looking to find out if this is just for the remainder of FY26 and whether it's already cost us $5.9 million to stand up, even though we didn't fund it last year. If you know, sometimes the supplementals are we spent seven and we need three more. Is 5.9 the totality of what this virtual contact center is costing us?
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that's a great question. The number that came before the committee last year was upwards of $8 million. The department worked very hard to identify that some of this cost could be Medicaid eligible. So that is what brought the cost down to $5.9 million. The importance of ensuring that we are getting benefits out timely to Alaskans necessitated the need to continue the contract, and this is the remainder amount that would be needed for the entire year.
Fiscal year,
yes.
Please continue.
Thank you. Right. So moving forward to slide five, we've got the capital supplemental requests. Again, noting at the top here, the December 11th budget that the governor introduced included the $70.1 million for the statewide transportation improvement plan, or STIP. So that is reflected on that first line. And then we have the summary of the agency requests by department for the February 3rd introduction of the supplementals. Those supplementals totaled $57.3 million in all funds. There are no general funds associated with these capital projects, and the total capital supplemental bill totals $70.2 million in general funds and $28.1 million in all funds. And on the next slide, I've highlighted some of the larger items for the committee, just to highlight a few of them. Under the Department of Commerce, Community and Economic Development, we have two awards for the Alaska Energy Authority related to bulk fuel upgrades. One is for Federal Receipt Authority under the High Energy Cost Grant that they are receiving. The second is $25 million of what we call statutory designated program receipts. This is money that they would receive from an outside organization such as the Denali Commission or the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. They are providing the $25 million to the state to continue the work on the bulk fuel upgrades. Additionally, we have a continuation of the Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission's capital project. You may recall this one from last year. This is phase two. There's $1.2 million of AOGCC's receipt authority to continue upgrading the system. In the Department of Natural Resources, we have another item that is statutory designated program receipts. It's $6 million to protect coastal Alaska Native communities. This is work that the Department of Natural Resources will be doing on behalf of the Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium. It is work to do that provides mapping and evaluation of our coastlines and impacts from flooding and other events. Within the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, we have continued to experience an increase in response needs by the department when it comes to emergency weather or catastrophic events. So, for example, the Juno winter storm that we had most recently, as well as Typhoon Halong, the department continues to respond to those events and assist the communities beyond what the work that the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs does through Homeland Security Emergency Management. Some of these costs are not eligible to be reimbursed by FEMA. And so they scrubbed their capital budget and came up with reappropriations of $5.1 million to direct that money towards a capital project, allowing them to continue to respond to the current year events that they have responded to already, as well as any that are into the future. And lastly, we have a request for, again, statutory designated program receipts in the University of Alaska. This is $8 million from a donation to the University of Alaska's Museum of the North Planetarium.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. The DOT expenditure, Ms. Sanders, reminds me that this week I read a headline. And basically it was that some of our disaster grants from the state application to the feds, where we thought we were going to get 100% reimbursed, they're now saying 75% reimbursement. Is any of that reflected in our supplementals of we're going to need more money in the DOT or the disaster relief funds because we're not going to get 100% reimbursement from the feds?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, not at this time. My understanding is that the Department of Military and Veteran Affairs is appealing that to try and get a 90-10 breakdown, and I don't believe that they have heard a response back yet.
Follow-up, Representative Hannon.
Thank you. Remind me procedurally, because you have restrictions of you had to submit supplementals by day 15, I presume that kind of thing, that whenever it comes in, you're allowed to submit and say we need, because we're not going, is that correct?
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, yes. While we have a statutory deadline, the legislature has been very gracious over the years to allow the administration to continue to bring forward supplemental requests as they are identified. So as I mentioned earlier, one of those items that I, off the top of my head, is just not included in here is the fire fund deposit. And so as soon as we have a finalized number, we'll bring that forward. If we receive additional information or feedback from the federal government regarding the disaster and whether we need to inject more funding into that, we'll bring that before the committee as well.
Thank you.
Director, we see that you've introduced a bill that excludes supplemental items that were put in the operating budget. Is that right?
Chair Josephson, yes. The bill that was introduced only reflects the supplementals that were released on February 3rd. If we had incorporated them into the bill, we would have had a duplication of items there.
Sure. We've had a debate. The state has had a debate about the urgency of the transportation match. We had a meeting with Department of Corrections yesterday, and you mentioned fire, and I'm recalling, obviously, that fire seasons can start in the spring. Are there other items here, given that this could become one big budget, sorry for the term, that the governor doesn't get to sign or veto until June? Is there anything else that's pressing on this list that has about 80 operating items?
Through the chair, or to the chair, Representative Josephson, all of these items can be addressed by the June 30th date effective. I mean, that's the time frame that we have. That's why this wasn't submitted as a fast-track supplemental.
Okay. Questions? Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I want to go to one of the specific items in the spreadsheets, item number 60, which is a small supplemental of $1 million for statehood defense. When we last left that item in the spring, my recollection is that we had $5 million still in that fund, and so I am curious why we need another million supplemental for ongoing legislation for ongoing when it spans multiple years, and that the previous appropriation had multiple year spending authority.
Director.
Through the chair, Representative Hannon, it's my understanding from my last conversation with Deputy AG Mills that was expected to be gone here shortly within this fiscal year. And that there would be additional needs that needed to be covered in both fiscal year 2026 and fiscal year 2027. We can follow up with you if you'd like on the balances of those appropriations.
Yes, we would like that balance. Yeah. The stat, and I guess we have, through the chair,
yes,
we have struggled to get sort of an accounting, not just how many cases are we working on, where's our contractual obligations, because to some degree it has seemed like we're laying out, we're just going to sue and sue and sue until we are out of money. And we want to sort of get our heads around how many pieces of litigation do we currently have and how long are we going to be in litigation over them.
Representative Hannon, I chair that subcommittee. We make these inquiries every year. I'd be happy to help you with that as well. So we'll find there'll be two ways to get there. All right. Anything more that you would like to tell us about the FY26 supplemental?
Thank you, Chair Josephson. Those were the pieces that I wanted to cover again. I have a very large crew behind me. All of us are available to answer questions as you work through these. We can assist your staff in making sure you guys have the information that you need to make decisions. I am also available if there are specific questions that want to be directed towards me. And I think the only other thing that I'll note is, I do expect to bring those additional supplemental items before it as we move through the process. I think the next timeline is amendments are due on February 18th. So there may be supplementals included in that release as well as we work through the process.
Co-Chair Schrage.
Thank you, Chair Josephson, and through the chair to Director Sanders. Thanks for being here. First off, thank you for the timeline on when we can expect the next update. That was going to be one of my questions, but you covered it, so that's wonderful. Following up on Rep. Josephson's questions about just the first batch being in the operating budget, now we have a new bill. I assume your preference is to have a supplemental move forward that contains all of those items. Is that a fair assumption, or do you have a preference on how we move forward?
Through the chair, co-chair Schrage, I don't have a preference, and I see that more as the legislature's prerogative to determine how they're going to move forward with bills.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Director. We will set aside the presentation which accompanies the governor's own House Bill 289. And we're going to move to deed now. We'll take a brief at ease while they set up. Brief at ease. We're back on record in House Finance, the Al Adams Room at 214 on Wednesday, February 4th. We'll now hear from the Department of Education Early Development on its 2027 budget overview. With us today from the Department of Education Early Development is Karen Morrison, Deputy Commissioner, and Don Hennish, Director of Administrative Services. Also in line is Commissioner Dina Bishop. And I will check to make sure. Yep, there she is. Would our presenters like to come forward to put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation?
Good afternoon, co-chairs and committee members. For the record, my name is Karen Morrison, and I serve as the Deputy Commissioner for the Department of Education.
Good morning. My name is Dawn Hanisch, and I serve as the Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education.
Welcome. Please begin.
Is Commissioner Bishop online? She was going to start us out.
Commissioner, would you like to make some introductory remarks?
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I appreciate and am honored to be here with you today, although on audio. My name, for the record, is Dina Bishop, the Commissioner of Education for the Department of Education and Early Development. You are in good hands. I want to let you know with the team there, I regret that I am not down there. Our travel budget was reduced a bit, and so we are spreading our work across 12 months of travel. But I will be present in Juneau next week. If there's any follow-up, please let me know. To start the presentation today, DEED always grounds ourselves in the mission, vision, and purpose for our work. And my preference and focus is truly on the vision. And it is basically improving the character and quality of the world around us and for students to do that. So what we want students to know and be able to do when they leave us is paramount for the department. Just to begin the presentation with a background and the backdrop of the statutory duty of the department.
Yep. We're at slide
chapter 3, public schools.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, sorry, sir. On slide 3, you'll see that the statutory duty of the department is outlined in Chapter 3, Public Schools, the establishment of a school system, as well as Chapter 7, Administration of Public Schools. Statutes really outline the state school board, the staffing, as well as the commissioner, but the duties of the department is a general supervision over public schools. As you may know, the State Board of Education in 2018 has operated in setting priorities for our state, and the five shared priorities are there before you. Most recently in our board meeting, they reaffirmed these, focusing the work to continue this work that was generated throughout Alaska to set SMART goals by 2028. There is a report to the legislature being presented next month, so you will get an update on this as well as other work. At this time, I'll turn it back to the room, and please know that as needed, I can certainly answer any questions, and I'm happy to do so. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Commissioner. We'll give it to your staff now. We'll take off from slide 4 or 5 is what they want. Please proceed.
For the record again, Dawn Hanisch, Administrative Services Director. On our agenda today, we're going to walk through a brief organizational overview, then walk through the department's financial summary, division-level funding, average daily membership trends, and the major fiscal year 2027 budget changes. This slide, we've provided some acronyms. If you see something that's missing, please don't hesitate to let us know.
Okay. Slide 6 or 7.
So the Department of Education and Early Development, the department is overseen by the Alaska State Board of Education and led by Commissioner Dina Bishop. There are five separate divisions, four of which are overseen by Deputy Commissioner Karen Morrison. In addition, DEED provides administrative support services to three independent commissions and boards. This slide has picture.
Oh, go ahead, slide eight.
Okay. Here is a picture of how services and supports are organized within each division.
Okay. Slide nine.
This slide is a continuation of the department's organization and is specific to the commission and boarded programs.
Okay. Slide 10.
The governor's fiscal year 2027 proposed budget for the Department of Education and Early Development totals approximately $1.79 billion. The proposed budget fully funds the K-12 foundation program at approximately $1.27 billion, consistent with statutory requirements. In addition, the pupil transportation program is statutorily fully funded at $72.8 million. The budget includes $467,000 in funding from dividend donations to the dividend raffle fund, distributed to districts per the statutory formula. It also adds $771,000 to support a new residential school program in the Lake and Peninsula School District, expanding access to statewide residential learning. The department has 10 permanent part-time positions, 280 permanent full-time positions, and 16 non-permanent positions.
Slide, we'll stay at 10. A question from Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Ms. Hannish, can you tell me what your vacancy rate is at the department?
Yes, through the chair, Don Hannish, to the representative. As of December 2025, DEED has 37 vacancies, which puts the department's vacancy rate at 18.5%. DEED is actively recruiting for 14 of those positions. The remaining vacancies are due to fiscal restraints.
Follow-up?
Representative Hannon.
Can you translate what that means to me? Fiscal restraint, are they because of hiring freezes you can't advertise for them, or are they unfunded?
Through the chair, they're unfunded.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Then I want to tie back to, you described a new residential school program. Can you tell me, would you reprise the paragraph that you just read describing that? And I'm wanting to understand if those were new positions at DEED that are there to support that school, or if they're not reflected in the employee counts.
Director.
The budget adds $771,000 to support a new residential school program in the Lake and Peninsula School District.
Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are there positions at DEED associated with that money? Are they... Okay, Ms. Morrison's shaking her head.
There's none.
Okay. One more follow-up?
Feel free. Representative Hannon for the
director. Was that a specific line item add in last year's budget to DEED for that support? It's a new element to me. I did not remember hearing about it in the past.
Director.
The $771,000 is a new element for fiscal year 27.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Valerie.
Thank you. And through the chair. Chair, is the Commissioner Bishop still on the line? Is she?
Yes.
To her, I'd just like to make a quick comment, and then I will ask you a question, if that's okay. Commissioner Bishop, thank you so much for being online. I commend you for it and for acknowledging that we're in a financial crisis. So I appreciate you still being here. That's what every commissioner should be able to do if they can't be here fiscally, to show up online for us. Through the chair, I was going to direct. Okay, thank you. Could you say again the, because I didn't write it down as fast as I should have, the amount of vacancies that you have, the cost, because you're still receiving funds even though they're vacant positions, correct, and the amount that you're receiving for those?
Director.
Through the chair, we have 37 vacancies, 14 of which we are actively recruiting for.
Can I do a quick follow-up?
Yes, I'm
thank
hoping you.
You
do, actually.
So
Representative Ballard.
Thank you. So you have, you're recruiting for 14, I did my math, 23. Why aren't we recruiting for all of them, and why wouldn't you just return them back to us and then come to us if you needed a position? That's a lot of slush funds.
Through the chair, we'd be happy to follow up with that information for you.
Okay, may I?
You may. Representative Ballard.
Thank you. What is the total again for the 14 positions you're recruiting for, and what is the total for the 37? Fiscally, how much money are you receiving for those positions? Do you know?
Director.
Through the chair, I'd be happy to get that information over to you right away.
And I'm going to just make a quick comment.
Please, Representative Ballard, go ahead.
You're sitting in front of the Finance Committee, and I know you guys are very well prepared on a lot of things. I would assume you knew these questions were going to come up. Again, we're the Finance Committee. Saying you're going to get it back to us makes me believe that you just don't want it on public record. So next time you guys come back in front of us, I really want those numbers all the time in the future in front of us so the public can hear what's going on. Thank you. Thank you.
Yes. I think this director, this ASD, is quite new to the system. So she'll get that for us on
round two.
Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Ms. Hannish, I asked you some questions earlier about those same positions, and I believe you said that the 23 positions that you're not recruited for are currently not funded in your budget. Is that correct?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay, so only 14 of them are currently funded in their operating budget, and although they have PCNs for 23, they're not recruiting for them, and there's no money in the budget. Is that correct?
Director?
Through the chair, that is correct.
Okay.
I still want to see that explanation in writing. Thank you.
So think of this as homework. And please route it through the chair.
I think it might be
Moore. Representative Moore.
And I don't want to say it again.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I do believe Commissioner Bishop's on the line, right? Is she not able to answer these questions for us?
A commissioner.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Moore, if there's an additional question, I can answer it, but it is absolutely correct that while the PCNs or position control numbers have remained within the D budget, you will see over time that there's been decrements of funding. And when the decrements of funding don't match being able to have the positions, as the positions became vacant, they literally are just position control numbers. There isn't work behind them. The work has been reassigned. However, we are actively recruiting for 14 positions that do have funding, that we do have permission to hire. But the way the state works is that you do receive position controls. You create position control numbers to be able to hire an employee, an FTE. But once your funds are no longer there, unless it is specifically eliminated with legislation, the PCN remains.
Director, I think that your job just got easier to respond to that. We're going to go to Representative Galvin, then Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. My question is, firstly, around the 14 PCNs, if you would outline for us what those positions are doing to meet the 5 shared strategic priorities, that would be helpful for us so that we know that you have in mind, what direction you have in mind to go in order to meet the overall goal, which, of course, is student success. That would be helpful to me. I believe likely it's a lot around the reading, but I want to make sure to have a better sense of that. Secondly, if I may,
follow up,
please.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. There has been a lot of discussion, and this is really, there's no slide for this question, but there's been a lot of discussion from the federal side around what's going on with all of the teachers, particularly in rural Alaska, who are needing the H-1 visa and the issue around the $100,000 per person who is coming in from another country. I'm sure you're well aware in many of our rural schools, more than half of the teachers are from the Philippines, for example. There are quite a few schools who are living in that world. And in, I know that part of what you're doing is to help with recruitment retention, and this is not in a slide, so I wanted to ask if you have a sense of what we're going to do. If it's $100,000 a teacher, I'm worried. Is there any sense of what's going on with the administration on the federal side? If you've heard, if you're part of that internal discussion, perhaps the commissioner's better aware if we've gotten a waiver and what that's going to look like, because if we don't get somewhere in that discussion, we really are going to see a death spiral downward in terms of our teacher recruitment and retention.
Let's see, rather than just leaving that question hanging out there,
okay.
Commissioner or your deputy, do you have a response as to the H-1D issue? I've read that as well.
Yes, sir.
Yes. What is your response to how we make that affordable?
You.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Sorry. Through Chair Josephson to Representative Galvin. You are correct. In the recent presidential proclamation, a federal fee of up to $100,000 for certain H-1B visa applications was requested. I did send a formal letter to the U.S. Secretary of State requesting an exemption from the supplemental H-1B fee that could block already hired and certainly fully certified teachers from entering Alaska. That letter was twofold, to allow those that were already in the pipeline to move forward, as well as allowing for a broader exemption pathway in recognition of Alaska's persistent rural and remote staffing shortages, as you shared. To put this into context, please know that 7% of all Alaska certificated teachers presently are on J-1 and H-1 visas. Presently, there are 280 educators teaching in the field for H-1B visas and 180 educators on J-1 visas. There are other types that Mexico and Canada give, but that primarily they are the H-1B and J-1. Again, we have not heard movement, but we have made a request for a waiver and are working towards this end. I do believe there may be a direction at the federal government to direct these more to the medical and technology fields and not other social service fields. We will report on that when we have additional news. Thank you for that interest because it is critical. Thank you.
Follow up, if I may?
Follow up.
Thank you. So if I heard you correctly, then the medical and technology fields are where this is targeted. I think that it went into effect as of September of 2020. The last summer. And so that would mean that it's already in effect. And I guess in the short run, what are we going to do about that? I very much appreciate that we have a letter of advocacy in. Have you heard anything about the timing of that? And in the meantime, do you have a suggestion for districts or, you know, ways that we can support them from the state side?
Commissioner.
Through the chair to Member Galvin, we have not been assessed, even the teachers since it's been in effect, have not been assessed, the teachers nor the districts, the $100,000 at this time. Okay. And so we continue to advocate for a waiver, if you will, but we have not heard a final recommendation for that. And we can follow up once we do get additional reporting.
Thank you. If I may follow up, just a comment.
Representative Galvin. Yes.
Thank you. I appreciate if we could be kept informed of any consultation that is happening and ways where we may weigh in, if that would be helpful, I'd appreciate it. I'm sure we would all sign on to a resolution or anything that would help in that advocacy effort. 7% of our teachers, 280, that's roughly around $30 million, and it would matter. A lot of our schools would be sunk. So anything that we can do to help you in this effort of advocacy, I would appreciate hearing about it.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you,
Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair, this is probably an open-fielded question, so anyone can probably take it. Since Representative Galvin had brought up the topic of teachers, it gets me to really thinking about the vacancies that we have. Is the department engaging with and or advocating to the University of Alaska Anchorage about their teaching credential program? We talk about importing teachers from out of state and out of the country to fill a need, yet our – and the universities, this is not about the university, but about your advocacy to them. They were here earlier in the week. But is the department advocating to the university system to say we need to fix our education at the university level to create teachers in the state from our largest community to help out with this problem? Is this something you guys are actually looking at and actually advocating for and doing something about?
Should we stay with the commissioner? Commissioner.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. That's a great question, and interestingly enough, that was one of the goals in the State Board of Education's priorities, to really have 90% of all educators coming out of the university system. Having been a former regent myself, the numbers just don't add up to the interest in education broadly through the University of Alaska. Hence, we've utilized other alternatives resources to add to the avenues to become a teacher. And presently, we are very excited to share, and the House Education and Senate Ed will have requested some additional information on this, but we have begun with district partners and other hiring sponsors apprenticeship programs so that people in rural areas and other areas that aren't in core necessarily in the core can build their talent pool with people that do have ties to their community. And so the apprentice model is presently where paraprofessionals who do not have a degree can work through the apprenticeship model, a federally approved apprenticeship model, to work and earn and grow and be certificated after that pathway. In addition, we are working with the military with a program of educators who, talented people who leave the military with their education to have a path to certification. And that is in addition to working with the universities, of course. The board did provide the University of Alaska. If you recall, they lost their accreditation at one time. They are building it back up, and they continue to grow. But sadly, the numbers of the need in the Alaska and the turnover rate, natural, you know, turnover rate especially, I just don't think there's enough interested folks in one avenue. And the turnover rate sometimes in rural Alaska is really due to the interest and ability of people to remain in local communities. So we're attacking that major concern on quite a bit of different fronts. That's an excellent question. Thank you.
Follow-up, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. Thank you for that. I really look forward to hearing more about that program and those ideas, and not just hearing about them, but actually seeing them be successful. So from your answer, you are indicating that you're saying that there's a demonstrated lack of interest, and I would like to follow up on that specific comment. Is the department actually looking at solutions for how to make a correction there, and specifically inform the legislature on activities or actions that we can directly take to help change that course? What I'm trying to actually ask is as the department that has the oversight on this, if we're seeing a very problematic issue with recruitment in a very needed space, I expect that the department should be trying to find a direct solution on making sure that we have an interest to folks coming into that career field. And I'm very interested to hear from the department the very specific recommendations that you are going to be bringing forward to the legislature to ask us to take action, whether that is funding, program changes, statute changes. My expectation is that your department's doing that. Is that something you'd be committed to bringing forward and providing to the committee?
Right. We're likely to make this the last on this just because we have ways to go. Commissioner, on the issue of recruitment and your providing information to the House Finance Committee.
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, absolutely. We do have multiple avenues that we are presently working on, from high school programs all the way up. And I don't want to share that this is an Alaskan problem. This is really a national issue with shortage of teachers nationwide. So we compete with not only with other states in this same career field, but also with other career fields. So yes, we will bring those forward and happy to share many of the actions in local districts as well as state level as well.
Thank you.
And one thing I would say, Representative Bynum, is the Board of Regents always has a line item where that is unfunded, where they want, it's typically like $2.5 million additional money on in support of their teacher recruitment and retention effort. So that's another avenue to scratch that itch, so to speak. Yeah. All right. Slide 11.
Hey, again, Dawn Hanisch, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education and Early Development. This slide provides a visual overview of how funding is distributed within the department. The expenditures pie chart on the left illustrates how a significant portion of funding, which is just over $1,676,000,000, and or 93.63%, is distributed through grants to support public education across Alaska. The pie chart on the right shows how funding is allocated across the department's divisions. The K through 12 portion represents ADM-driven formula funding, which is over 77% of the department's total budget. The next slides will provide additional details in the specific components within each division.
Okay, let's go to slide 12.
We start with the executive administration section within DEED, which includes the State Board of Education, the Commissioner and Deputy Commissioner, the Office of Education Advocacy, the Legislative Liaison, and four additional board and support staff positions. The Executive Administration component of DEED receives funding from the UGF and IA, which is interagency receipts. Each division pays internally for the services of the Commissioner's Office provided department-wide. The Governor's proposed budget for fiscal year 2027 is $1,886,000. The reduction in unrestricted general funds reflects legislative actions taken in prior years, including the elimination of travel funding for the Commissioner's Office and the State Board of Education. In addition, positions were transferred from the Executive Administration section to the Student and School Achievement component to realign the Tribal Native Languages Program. Associated general funds were transferred with the positions to support this realignment. These changes reflect budget structured adjustments rather than reductions to program services.
Okay, slide 13.
This slide summarizes the operating budget and position history for the Division of Finance and Support Services, which administers the majority of the K through 12 formula funding. Most of the funding shown here are pass-through funding distributed to school districts, not department operations. Total funding. I'm so sorry, I lost my place. Total funding is at $1.52 billion in fiscal year 2025 actuals, and it has declined to $1.48 billion in the fiscal year 2027 budget proposal. The reduction reflects a lower UGF and technical and structural adjustments rather than changes to statutory formulas. The division has 24 full-time permanent positions.
Director, I'd like to interrupt you for a moment, and I don't often, just because of our respective schedules, get to talk to the commissioner. And so, Commissioner, if you're still with us, I have a question for you. Are you with us?
Yes, sir.
So the Anchorage School District, where I attended school in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, I guess, has indicated, and they seem, Commissioner, very credible. These are very smart people who tell the truth. And what they report is that classes will grow to as many as 38 at the secondary level. Middle school sports will end. There is the shuttering of programs, slashing of positions, and that the reserves are spent down because there was no other place to go. The municipality of Anchorage's response is to tax as much as it can within the law. Does the department find ASD, as an example, credible? Does it find its panic button, if you will, a credible explanation of events, and does it take a position on how to help?
Thank you, Chair. That's a great question, and my position as the commissioner is not to pass judgment on any one district, but what I would like to really engage in is a look at the audited financials over time. And as you may have known, across Alaska, Juneau District presently isn't finding the massive deficit as some. Other districts are finding it smaller. And then there was even a report of a district operating in the black. And members that are on the committee have those districts in their school districts. So really, I think what this is asking is, why is it in one district one is seen and they're using alternative modes to, like you said, tax? I think it takes a deeper look of trend analysis and then the expenses that are incurred. I can share one thing that I do know about rural Alaska when I looked at certain line items is that the majority of funds in rural Alaska as compared to larger, and although you did ask about Anchorage, is the cost for energy and utilities. Per pupil in rural Alaska, there's a tremendous amount that doesn't go to the classroom because of just the cost of doing business. So I think what would be prudent is a study of a random selection of districts and to see where those costs are and where are the drivers that are affecting some districts and not others. Because this is the age-old question, and it's a good one.
But Commissioner, historically, we haven't had separate funding for energy and utilities. So are you asking for reform so that districts no longer would be fully obligated to pay for those items?
Chair Josephson, my position here isn't to, legislate any kind of recommendation at this time. I can share with you and provide this body evidence of where expenses are being made and where the costs are that the districts are experiencing. We can confirm those numbers insofar as those audit, yearly audits. I would suggest what it may take is a deeper dive to look at more than just those reported, to really look at a trend line to find those out. To your question on specific energy, the data is there to demonstrate that growth in some places, whereas other places did have a more stable cost structure.
All right. I mean, I my concern is that what you've said sounds reasonable. You want a more surgical answer. But meanwhile, TikTok, children aging, inflation not adjusted, and here we go. Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I appreciate the question, and I very much appreciate hearing the commissioner, especially as she's referring to various school districts and what their needs are. And if I may, I would like to share with this group for the record that while we have in Anchorage just over 40,000 students, MATSU has around 19, and it also has a deficit of around $22 million. Kenai right now with 7,900 students is at is at an $8 million deficit. And I apologize for calling you co-chair Foster. I know you're co-chair Josephson. And Juno is with 4,000 students, so it's a different scale, and they're looking at a deficit of $5 million. The only district that I know of, I have done some research around this, so I want to share it with the body. In my work in the subcommittee for finance, I really wanted to have a better perspective around the entire state. There are very few who are not with a deficit. One of them is Fairbanks. Congratulations. But what I hear from Fairbanks is that they have made some really, really, really tough cuts, and they have added some really, really tough class sizes. So they made those decisions last year, and they are not with a big deficit, but every other district is with. It's all to scale, right? And so I appreciate hearing both utilities and insurance, and I'm going to add to that health care, add to that for some, it's different problems around transportation, or maybe it's fixing their major maintenance because they don't have enough money in major maintenance, and so they scoop it out of the BSA. They scoop it out of what we're hearing is the primary foundation formula, which we know in rural Alaska, they just are make and do. And it's not, from what I've heard from school districts, and I've spoken to more than 20 superintendents, it is rough. And to your point, Co-Chair Josephson, yes, we are living with people in Anchorage calling us and saying, wait, my fifth grader can't get into any athletics next year. My high schooler who loves hockey more than anything can't be doing hockey at their own high school. That is really unusual for us to deal with. And I'm going to add, it's a different environment in rural Alaska, sometimes even tougher. So I think it's important that we consider all of this, because as we're thinking about, you know, being proud that we are fully funding our statutory obligation, which we are doing, I appreciate that. I think we also need to include in this conversation your point of, is it enough? We're dealing with all these phone calls. Why? We clearly haven't kept up with what I'm going to just call inflationary costs of educating kids. And so I would hope that this conversation continues. I know that in the subcommittee, we're going to be continuing it as much as we can. But the district, the State Department is doing, I know, their best job of working on a very skinny budget and supporting all 54 districts. So I appreciate you being here to give us, you know, what you're doing and helping us appreciate how we can help you. So thank you.
Representative Tomaszewski.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, and through the chair. And just to address some of the comments that Co-Chair was just talking about within the cost of utilities and especially in the rural communities on how high electric and heat and all of that is really digging deep into the funding. I've recommended it before, bringing the school districts into that power cost equalization plan, and really because I think that would certainly help those school districts because they're not in that. They, as a school, they pay the full and high cost of utilities in the villages, in the rural areas. And honestly, I believe the prices that the folks that bring in those utilities, that bring in the fuel, set it based on what that school district is willing to pay. And everybody else pays that also. And so I think that's something that really needs to be looked into. As far as deficits and surpluses in the school district budgets, I think there needs to be a real and deep audit of these school districts, because we hear a lot of information and we see a lot of information come out, and it's not always, doesn't always reflect the actual circumstances. And, you know, just for example, we talked about Fairbanks having a surplus all of a sudden. Well, they found $11.4 million in a couch cushion somewhere, and all of a sudden they have a surplus. Where did that money come from? Where is it? Why did they not know they had that money? And so real audits. We don't want smoke and mirrors. We don't want talking points. We don't want emotion. We want honest, true facts to be able to make these decisions. And until we have that, I think we're going to continue to spin our wheels, and we're going to continue to beat around the bush on these on this subject. So I'm all for great educations for kids. I think all of us are. I don't think you find anyone that would say otherwise. This is an important issue, and kids deserve a good education, but they deserve honest and accurate information at the same time. So thank you for the work that you do. Really appreciate it.
Let's go to slide 14.
For the record, my name is Dawn Hanisch, Administrative Services Director, and we have been joined here by our Finance and Support Services Division Director, Heather Heineken, to cover the next few slides.
Ms. Heineken?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is Heather Heineken. I'm the Director of Finance and Support Services for the Department of Education. And starting on slide 14, we have a graph here showing the total state aid and one-time funding dating back to 2006. And you can see the years that the one-time funding was added in the reflected in the separate color here. In the preliminary 2026 column and 2027 column, that does reflect the new BSA, statutory BSA of $6,660. We are seeing a little bit of a decrease for 2027, and that's specifically due to a decline in projected ADM or average daily membership.
Okay. Slide 15.
And slide 15 is similar information. Again, the projected state aid for 2027 dating back to factual numbers of all the way back to 2026. And the line there demonstrates the fluctuation in the ADM from year to year, and just a slight decline over the years as we continue to see a decline in student enrollment.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice. And through the chair, just really quick, I was curious on why you weren't including in the state aid slide on 15, why you were not including the one-time funding components in that slide.
Through the chair, thank you for that question. The numbers are reflective. That's just a total accumulation of the state aid, so that the numbers should be both the one-time as well as the original state aid.
Okay. Last comment was from Ms. Heineken for the record.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justice, and through the chair for a follow-up.
Mm-hmm. Representative Bynum.
I must be off a little bit because I'm looking at, for example, on 2025, we show 1.16 on that number from slide 15. And if you look at slide 14, it's 1.16. And then we have the one-time funding of 173. So I don't see that those are cumulative, just state aid only and the ADM. That's what I was trying to point out.
Ms. Heineken.
Through the chair, for the record, Heather Heineken, you are correct. I apologize for that error. That does just show the state aid, and I'm happy to change that slide to reflect both the combination of the funding.
Thank you, through the chair. Yep. I just was curious on why it wasn't included, if there was an intentionality with that, or if it's just it wasn't included. Thank you.
Through the chair of this Heather. No intention there.
Slide 16.
All right. For the record, Heather Heineken, slide 16 is our statewide average daily membership, and this includes a breakout of brick-and-mortar students compared to correspondent students, and as you can see, it's about a 1 in 5 student ratio for our number of students in correspondence to brick-and-mortar students. We are seeing a decline for the first time in recent years, a slight decline for correspondence and continued decline for brick-and-mortar students in our projected ADM for FY27.
Okay. Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justison, and through the Chair. When we're looking at these numbers, we're looking at the overall spend that we have, and we see that there's year over year, or at least over the last few most recent years, we're seeing a decline in the actual dollars that we're spending because that's based on the ADM. You know, contrary to what you might hear in some of the media out there is that there's massive hundreds of millions of dollars of additional spending that we've had year over year. And when I look at this, that isn't the case. That isn't the truth. Part of that, though, is because we are reflecting an ADM decline. Is the department actually tracking the correlation of ADM and physical space, facilities, transportation resources? Because I know that if I have one school in my community and I'm losing students in that community, the square footage doesn't change because I'm losing students. The fixed costs don't change because I'm losing students. So I'm wondering if the department is actually closely tracking and able to report on the actual burden that is being put on school districts when we see the declining enrollment based on a facilities and a transportation perspective.
Ms. Heineken.
Thank you. Through the Chair, this is Heather Heineken to Representative Bynum. We are not officially tracking that. That is an ongoing conversation that we do have within the department because those dollars are the same dollars that have to cover the ADM dollars are what generate the operations and maintenance of all the facilities, and those costs don't decline with a decline of students, I agree. So we would be happy to pull a report together and officially look at that information.
And through the Chair?
Yes, follow up.
Thank you. What I'd really like to see is not only those numbers, but a recommendation from the department on how the legislature can address that. I mean, we obviously have lots of different ideas, but it would be nice to know that the department recognizes that this is a problem and that there is a clear recommendation from the department on what we can do to help alleviate the problems this is causing in our school districts. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Representative Allard, then Moore.
Thank you, and through the Chair. So I guess my question would be, when we're doing the ADM, how come we're not looking at establishing doing the ADM 3 to 4 times per year? Get a better accuracy of enrollment. I don't know who wants to answer that. Maybe the commissioner. Maybe Dr. Bishop would. I'm just curious on that, because if you have an accurate ADM, so what I do know is this, what I've been told. That potentially when you have the dividend that comes in October. Can you quickly answer, though, when we do the ADM? Is it October? Yeah. Do you know what date?
Through the Chair, to Representative Allard, it's a 20-day count. So okay. The last day is the fourth Friday of October, and then it's 20 school days backwards.
Okay. So what I was told
Follow up, Representative Allard.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Chair. So what I was told is that people from all over the state of Alaska come in to spend their dividend within Anchorage because they need supplies for the winter. The winter's coming. They need to be handled. But they bring the kids with them. Maybe the kids come out of school. They're doing their doctor's appointments, all sorts of things. They get caught up. It's reasonable. But by doing that, the ADM is lower than probably it is throughout the rest of the year. Could you tell me if you're looking, do we need legislation, or are you guys looking at doing an ADM count 2 to 3 times more throughout the year to see where these kids go to different school districts, too, if they move? Thank you, Chair.
Whoever has the strongest opinion.
Knowledge.
Heartfelt.
Knowledge, yeah.
Yes.
Through the Chair to Representative Allard. That's a great question. It's something that we've talked about quite a bit in the department. And having been coming from a district, that OASIS count is pretty labor intensive for the districts. However, that's a policy decision that that the department would certainly love to have a conversation about, but not necessarily put forward something specific.
All right. And the last response was from Deputy Commissioner Karen Morrison.
Sorry.
Okay.
Through the Chair, could I just
This is Heather Heineken to Representative Allard. Just to clarify, if students, as long as a student is enrolled, it's not an attendance. They just have to be enrolled in the school. They could have an excused absence. They can have doctor's appointments. They can miss school for those days as long as they're enrolled during that period. There's truancy issues and all sorts of other things, but that's a different conversation. So that doesn't affect the ADM.
Okay.
I would agree with Deputy Commissioner Morrison that it's certainly a conversation, and I believe it was actually introduced last year in HB 50, one of the House bills, one of the bills put forward to do a second count just for that reason, because students do move around in the districts and to accommodate, to allow for that.
Can I just do a quick comment?
Quick comment.
Thank you. And Chair, the reason I brought that up was because when a student moves to a different school district, the school district it left will continue to get that money until the following year when they realize the child isn't there technically on their budget books anymore. So it could benefit some communities where parents are in Anchorage. They decide to either move out to Wasilla or they move to Tok. Those school districts should be gaining that income for that child. All right. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Moore.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the Chair, I'm wondering what, or maybe you guys have looked into it or not, what are the drivers for the declining ADM statewide?
Deputy Commissioner, you want to try that?
Through the Chair to Representative Moore. That's a great question. I think a lot of it has to do with some families choosing to homeschool. It also has to do with a lower number of families staying in Alaska, but we haven't done a deep dive as far as what the variables are, but those are a couple of the trends that we're seeing is parents are choosing to put their kids into correspondence programs. It's also my understanding that there are two additional private schools this year, and so parents may be choosing to have their children enrolled there. That's a very high level and not as detailed as probably you would like, but we can certainly provide more information on that.
Okay, follow-up?
Follow-up.
Thank you. And then do we have any information on which regions or districts are experiencing the steepest declines?
Deputy Commissioner Morrison.
Through the Chair, for the record, this is Karen Morrison. To Representative Moore, we probably have that information, but I do not have it right in front of me, so we'll follow up.
Great, thank you.
Representative Jimmy.
Okay.
Okay. All right, let's go to slide 17.
For the record, Don Hanisch, Administrative Services Director for the Department of Education and Early Development. Our next slide features the Division of Administrative Services. This division provides critical internal services to the department, including grants, administration, procurement, IT, human resources, and fiscal services. This division also manages the department's facilities leases. The governor's proposed budget provides $6,204,000 in funding for this division in fiscal year 27. Of note, there is a decrease of $1.5 million in interagency spending authority, not actual funds.
Okay. Slide 18.
The fiscal year 2027 governor's budget puts IEE at $207 million in funding, reflecting increased funding in UGF, DGF, and federal funding. Currently, the division has 74 permanent full-time positions. To strengthen tribal engagement and implementation of the Alaska Reads Act, two positions were transferred to the student and school achievement component, aligning policy with district support. The student and school achievement component also includes 9 federally funded non-permanent positions supporting the 5-year CLSD grant. Mental health trust funding continues to support DEED's positive behavior interventions and support initiatives, prioritizing rural and remote districts.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Through the Chair, If you could help by refreshing my memory, I believe that the REEDS Act had the pre-K grants going up $3 million per year, but for some reason the second year you didn't have enough schools that met the requirements, and so we didn't gain another $3 million that year. But is this reflecting, because now I think we're in our fourth year perhaps, are we reflecting $3 million each year, or at least from last year to this year? I just want to make sure that's on the record. Thank you.
Looks like Deputy Commissioner Morrison wants to weigh in.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin. I'd actually like to ask Heather Heineken. I just want to make sure that I'm, for the record, this is Karen Morrison. I just want to make sure we're really clear because there's multiple funding for pre-K. Mm-hmm. There is funding through mm-hmm. the foundation formula, which is K-12 funding. Okay. So that's Director Heineken's wheelhouse. And then there is also pre-K grants, which is through the Division of Innovation and Excellence.
Did you hear the question? So, Ms. Heineken.
Heather Heineken, through the chair to Representative Galvin. For the ADM, the 0.5 ADM for school districts, we are going into our fourth year, and each year the statute limits the amount of funding to up to $3 million. And so this year we're going into the third year, the years when. The last year we funded $2.7 million. And then we added, this year we're at, we've been able to add $3 million, so $5.7 million.
Follow-up. Representative Galvin.
Thank you. So as I understand it, the first year Anchorage applied for those grants, and they were the only ones, I think, who were able to receive them. Second year, there were not enough to add additional. So that's $3 million. My understanding is that we build $3 million each year, and if we have enough applicants who qualify. Second year, there were not enough applicants to add, is my understanding. Now we're in the third year, so my thinking, and please, maybe my math is off, but I thought we were going to go an additional $3 million this year on those grants, that's the way that the statute is written. If you could clarify, I'd be grateful.
Ms. Heineken.
Through the chair to Representative Galvin, this is Heather Heineken. It is up to $3 million. So we didn't have $3 million last year and get to add another $3 million this year for $6 million. It was what was needed up to, $2.5 million. And this year we were able to add $3 million, so it only went up to $5.5 or $5.7 million.
Okay.
Okay, I will take this offline because I'm still missing a year. And so I'd like to make sure we march through that and maybe with our ledge finance helping us. Thank you very much, Co-Chair.
Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson, through the chair. We've had lots of conversations about federal impact aid and how that's potentially going to have an impact on the state finances. I've heard a lot of conversations around this topic. Has there been any discussion within DEED to potentially take on the responsibility of making sure that we are applying for and trying to leverage impact aid as much as possible and basically take that over from the districts themselves as far as the application process?
Deputy Commissioner.
Through the chair to Representative Bynum, I'd actually like to ask Commissioner Bishop if she will address this question.
Commissioner, there was just a question, yes, about impact aid and taking over duties from districts.
Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. We can certainly, as the state's provision, support this, but impact aid is really related to local governments and local areas.
of untaxable areas. And so the local districts have an account of those families who reside within their boroughs or on other tribal land or military land. And so it would be difficult for the department at the state level to know where these people are. It really is a best fit for the local government. However, in so much as support is needed, DEDA is willing to step up and do what we can. We wouldn't want any funding left on the table, if you will. But certainly just from speaking as a superintendent with that experience, you are most familiar with your families and your community than the state government would be.
Follow-up, Representative Bynum.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. As a follow-up to that, is there anybody in the department that's actually coordinating and helping the school districts then do that process? I understand that the school districts themselves do see that at the ground level. However, the state is the direct beneficiary of these program or this program when school districts apply. So I absolutely want to make sure that we're getting the most benefit out of that program. So the question, I guess, is the follow-up, is the department actually have somebody that's coordinating and helping? And if not, is that something that you'd consider doing?
Commissioner Bishop.
Thank you. Thank you. Through the chair to Representative Bynum. I do know that we do provide technical assistance. We do have an expert on the impact aid, but that person does serve the functions of the state. What I will do, I have a biweekly meeting with superintendents, and I will address that with them at the next one on the 16th of February to see what that would look like and what types of supports they would need at the local level. You are correct. The local level does receive those funds, but the state does, through the funding formula, receive a deduct, if you will, on local taxation through that basic need. So it is a combination of benefits. Thank you.
And one other item related?
Unrelated.
Related.
Related.
Yes.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. Specifically on the topic of federal impact aid, as I'd mentioned earlier, that we do have an issue of denial from the federal government. We have an appeal that's going on. I know that the timing of when we might get an answer on that is potentially challenging to the budget. But as we move forward, have provisions been put in place and or are going to be put in place to prevent us from being in this position of uncertainty as we go into the future?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. To Representative Bynum, to speak to the first item, I will be meeting and we'll be continuing on our discourse or discussions, if you will, with the federal government, IAP, later this month, so we should get some more information. As you know, the federal government shutdowns have impacted a lot of our dates, as you suggested. They've become a little bit more sporadic. But I will follow up on that once we have that meeting finalized. Additionally, as you know, and you may know, as a body that the department has spoken to certainly House Education and House Senate regarding the local contribution issue. I know Ketchikan had some interest in that in the past about local contributions. We did have a provision to discuss, and our goal was actually to define more so what local contribution was according to the federal government's definitions. That was not a popular regulation, and so our recommendation to the state school board was to go back out to districts and go back to where we started, and we started our discussion 2 years ago with the finance officers of each district to get their input about those definitions, such as in-kind. Districts have to treat those differently according to their local boroughs and their local boroughs' definitions. So we continue to work on that. There is, I did read through some legislation that does ask for no cap on a local contribution, which would, of course, impact the ability of usage of that program in our state funding formula. If we didn't make the 25% disparity, only having the
most resource and least resource districts being within 25% of each other, we would risk being able to use impact aid as a deduct for local communities on their basic needs, and those local communities that do apply for it and receive it would retain those funds.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Joseph. And Commissioner, my question is also on impact aid, but it's a little more speculative. It's my understanding that federal impact aid is only available to districts who are first-class boroughs or cities running their own schools. Is the law restricted from allowing REAs? Could the state apply for federal impact aid for REA school districts on behalf of those districts?
Commissioner.
Thank you, Chair Josephson. I would like to defer to Heather Heineken in the room, but my understanding is there are some REA districts that do receive in lieu of tax money.
Ms. Heineken.
But it may be alternative programs. Thank you. Could I defer to the table in the room, the experts in the room?
You can. Ms. Heineken.
Through the chair, for the record, Heather Heineken to Representative Hannon. REAs are eligible for impact aid dollars. Most of theirs are the Indian lands that they qualify for, but they certainly apply for impact aid dollars. There are several that are currently receiving those funds.
Follow up. Does the Department of Education assist REAs in applying for their federal impact aid and PILT monies?
Ms. Heineken.
Through the chair, Heather Heineken to Representative Hannon. They're treated just the same as municipal districts. They apply on their own, and the department does have one staff member that is able to support the process.
Okay. If you, Representative Bynum, want to ask a quick question on slide 18, you may.
Thank you.
Single question.
And I promise, Co-Chair Josephson, and I won't have any further in-depth questions unless something pops up unexpectedly. But when we look at, on this slide, through the chair, when we look on this slide, the second half of the title says Education Excellence. And when we read down into the description of the mission, we say academic assessment and accountability. Now, I have heard from members of the administration and many folks in the public that criticize this legislature when we appropriate money in the tune of $1.3 billion for foundation formula and other items for school districts. And my response has been that we employ a department that helps us execute the laws that are in statute. And when I look under the statute 1407020, that is the duties of the department. And specifically under 16, it says that the department will monitor student performance, and under the department may intervene in school districts to improve the instructional practices as described in statute. And then there are many other items in there where we talk about that we as a legislature through our statutes have given you, the department, the responsibility of having this direct oversight of assessment and accountability, and you have the ability to intervene. So with that being said, it looks like that particular component is in this budget. For the department. Specifically, is there deficiency in this budget to allow you, the department, to do that specific part, which is academic assessment and accountability to our school districts? Because I'm hearing differently from members of the administration and the public. So I just want to clear, yes, this is our responsibility, and yes, we have the resources necessary to do that, or no, we do not have the resources necessary to do that, so that we, as a finance committee, can correct that.
That's a commissioner question. Commissioner Bishop.
Thank you, through chair to Representative Bynum. You have wonderful questions, and you're speaking my language. My doctorate is actually in accountability and assessment. So yes, insofar as the department
is responsible for running the federal accountability and academic program. We approve the state testing. We approve all that. I would say that just speaking as since 1990, I've been in the state doing education work as a teacher in all different jobs. The levers for accountability, sometimes those carrots and the sticks, aren't necessarily, utilized. Within the first time I've seen really strong accountability since NCAA basketball's on my mind. So not since NCLB where actually it was part of the federal law to actually have direct work into schools that, you know, weren't succeeding. I would say presently the strongest accountability is in the READS Act, where we can intervene in districts and really have law around districts communicating with their parents, being in certain different programs, having to do the assessments. But again, that accountability, none of all of our levers are established, given that the local we really defer to local boards for much of the policy in their boards. And so while we have the systems and the academic assessments, the carrots and sticks aren't necessarily all supportive around ensuring that growth. I would say more so with the READS Act, though, and we're moving in that direction in that regard.
Okay. We're going to move to slide 19.
All right. Co-Chair Josephson, I will at some point I would like to have on the record from the department specifically what items we can do to empower them. Because I know for certain that there are school districts. When we say we're just going to let the school districts do what the school districts are going to do, and we don't have direct reporting back to us, there is this disconnect between the $1.3 to $1.4 billion we're putting into this system and wanting to see specific results. And I can specifically say that in my school district, as many have seen in the news, that there's been very grave concern about how monies are being appropriated and how those are being what the oversight is. And I don't believe that there has been much of a report back to this body about deficiencies that might be happening in those districts. And then what we can do to help support the department to make sure that we correct those problems. So I'm just going to voice that I'm a little frustrated that this is such an important topic and such a big part of our budget that making sure the department has those resources necessary to hold our districts accountable, if they're saying that it's up to the districts, that we're able to have proper oversight of the department. So I appreciate the opportunity to say that.
I think your point's valid. I encourage you to pursue it further, and I would say it's going to be hard to get the administration to spend more than it's proposing to spend. It can be done. We've offered appropriations that don't get vetoed, so it's possible. But as a baseline, it's challenging. Let's go to slide 19.
For the record, Dawn Hanisch, Administrative Services Director. Our next slide is an overview of the Division of Libraries, Archives, and Museums. This proposed budget will see a reduction in the division's IA, which is actually just a reduction in spending authority, much like the Division of Administrative Services. The division currently has 48 full-time positions and one non-permanent position.
Okay. Slide 20.
Slide 20, we are looking at Mount Edgecombe High School's fiscal year 2027 governor's proposed budget, which is at $16,891,000, with slight increases to UGF and general funds, UGF and federal funds, while other funding sources remain static. The number of positions in the fiscal year 2027 governor's budget remain the same as in the fiscal year 2026 management plan, which is 10 permanent part-time positions, 44 permanent full-time positions, and 3 non-permanent positions.
Okay. Question from the co-chair. Co-chair Foster on slide 20.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Co-chair. I realize that this is a finance presentation that we're receiving mostly about the budget, but I just thought it would be worthwhile at least bringing up, because I've had so many people reach out to me about it, and that is some of the turnover that we're seeing at Mount Edgecombe. And you may not be able to address it. If there is anything you could offer, that would be great. Otherwise, I want to throw it out there so that maybe the commissioner or somebody could update us at some point.
Are you asking for an updated later time or now?
Would love some kind of a response now, but if not, later's fine. Thank you.
Yes, I'll refer that to the commissioner.
All right. Commissioner, update on Mount Edgecombe's woes, if it has woes.
Thank you. Yes, thank you, Chair Josephson, to Co-Chair Foster. Yes, I do want to share that next week I'll be in town with Mount Edgecombe Superintendent to present some of the changes that have occurred at Mount Edgecombe. Some of those changes that have occurred have been financial insofar as a contract did go out to a new dorm provider, which is now Nana Corporation, which is different. We had a change in principal, one of the principals, and we had a change in the superintendent. And with these changes, the continuity of some programs changed and altered. We are addressing those, all things from student activities, student health care, and the education program. We're happy to share, and the superintendent himself will be there. To note, from last year to this year, we are more in line with pre-pandemic staffing levels. We did reduce from last year to this year 4 teaching positions and 3 administrative positions. So those are on the school side, but we can also discuss the Nana Corporation dorm and kitchen side as well. Happy to do so, but we are proactively addressing it and look forward to speaking to the House Education, and we will share that presentation with you as well.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Josephson. I also have a question with regard to this particular school, the only school really where the state is responsible for this particular type of a school, very unusual. And it's important to note that I read in the headlines, and I'm hoping I'm wrong, that they've lost quite a few of their enrollment. So they're now down to perhaps as few as half the amount of students they used to have, or there's been some issue around losing enrollment. And with that in mind, I'm concerned that since they do operate using students through the formula, will there be a hole that the state will be expected to fill with the expected, holes that certainly will be there in UGF because of the lower enrollment? And any numbers you can give us around enrollment pieces, I think, are important for this discussion around our budget, please.
Through the chair to Member Galvin.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to Representative Galvin, rather, through the chair. There has been not a 50% reduction. There has been, from the beginning of the year, about a 25% reduction, which is higher than in previous years. There has been, just so you know, we will present the information on exit interviews. Some students needed higher care medically. Many students were, disappointed in the new program. It has not been just upperclassmen. It's really been across the board. Some students didn't make the basketball team, so they went back to their homes to play basketball there. It really has been a myriad of different issues. We do exit exams with each. But again, as Representative Allard mentioned, and we previously talked about the student count period. During the student count period, they did start with about 400. I believe the count period They were projected to start at 400. The count period had 385, and now we are a little over 300. But we can continue. We're doing some recruitment efforts. The student government is highly interested in this, and they're leading some of those actions to rebuild Mount Edgecombe and the interest in Mount Edgecombe, given the negative publicity about it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Let's go to slide 21.
For the record, Don Hanisch. For the Professional Teachers Practices Commission, the governor's proposed budget would see an increase in both UGF and DGF totaling just over $300,000. The commission has one permanent full-time position.
Okay. Slide 22.
The Alaska State Council on the Arts receives updated general fund authority based on license plate revenue projections of $80,000 and increased federal funding for the arts, health, and well-being program. This portion of the governor's proposed budget reauthorizes existing receipt authority for license plate revenues, aligns the authority with updated revenue projections, and ensures ASCA can expend revenue that is collected. The proposed budget would see a slight increase in the council's UGF and federal funding, which is attributed to the National Endowment. ASCS continues to have five permanent full-time positions and one non-permanent position.
All right, slide 23.
The Alaska Commission on Post-Secondary Education. The budget includes a $3.29 million increase from the Higher Education Investment Fund to support Alaska Performance Scholarship and the Alaska Performance Scholarship Step-Up Awards for the 2027-28 academic year. This reflects record increases in eligibility and usage following the enactment of House Bill 148 in 2024. In accordance with AS 1443-915C, a corresponding $1.6 million increment for the Alaska Education Grant is also funded to maintain the statutory two-thirds APS and one-third AEG funding structure. Both increments utilize the full 7% HEF funding cap. Although the governor's budget proposes an increase in DGF of just over $5 million. The commission continues to have 49 full-time permanent positions and two non-permanent positions.
All right, and finally, slide 24, and just the second portion of that slide, please.
Of course. For the record, Don Hanisch. So as one of our highlights, we want to bring your attention again to the new residential school program, Bristol Bay Regional Career and Technical Education Consortium. The trauma-engaged schools, positive behavior interventions and supports, coaching, funded at $150,000. Increased federal authority to support arts, health, and well-being programs, and an increase for the Alaska Performance Scholarship Awards and the Alaska Education Grants.
Okay. Thank you. I have a 3:45, and I intend to make that meeting. Did you have a comment or question?
Yes.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Co-Chair Justison. In the interest of time, I'm going to quickly ask if there was thought around the bill that passed through the House, through the Senate, and got signed by the governor around the teacher, state national board certification teachers. I know that was in your plan with regard to recruitment retention as part of how to keep our best of the best here in Alaska. And for whatever reason, there's not funding in the governor's budget for it. And it's a law that has passed. And so my question is, if the commissioner has thoughts around, I know that you have 37 positions, 18 of which are unfilled, that you're trying to fill at 14. Is there any way we can find a way to follow the law in this budget to make sure that these National Board Certified Teachers who were expecting some form of a stipend to get that.
Commissioner, briefly, what is your administration's policy on funding this statute?
Thank you, Chair Josephson, to Representative Galvin. To be clear, the bill did pass, not last session, but the session, or not last year, but the year before, and it did pass just in having the 30 days pass. So I don't believe the governor did specifically sign off. It was a passing due to not taking action. But within the specifics of the statute, it talks about pending appropriation. So without a funded appropriation to the budget process, the department hasn't implemented those incentive payments. We would be happy to do so if through the legislature this does come to fruition with funding for this particular incentive for National Board certification.
Follow up?
Very brief. Just
want to know if you have a recommendation for how we in the legislature might be able to pull those funds together without your – I think we would need your support to do it. And so if you would like to take this offline and we can talk about that, I just want to make sure that we come true to the law that we passed – that passed. And we can take that offline, Co-Chair.
Okay. I appreciate that. I want to thank our team today, your team, really, Commissioner Bishop, Deputy Commissioner Morrison, Director Hanisch, and Ms. Heineken. I forgot your title. I'm sure you have one. And that concludes our business for today. Our next House Finance Committee meeting is scheduled for tomorrow. Take note that tomorrow, February 5th, we're meeting at 9 a.m. And at that meeting, the Department of Revenue will be here to introduce House Bill 284, the Governor's Tax Compact Bill, followed by invited testimony from the Alaska Municipal League. With that, we will adjourn today's meeting at 3:41. Thank you.